Well, good morning. I'd like to thank the organizers for inviting me, and thank you guys for showing up first thing in the morning. So I'd like to, I'd like to start off this talk saying a few things about how genomics has enabled this research. Then I'd like to talk about the types of genes that we're interested in for ornamental traits. And finally, I'd like to give two examples of finding in genetic variation. One, induced variation in MLO of petunia, and second is natural variation in TFL1 of blueberry. So we now have the genome sequences of quite an array of plants. The ones in blue were the genomes that became available just last year. Let's see if I can do this. And this includes blueberry and another vaccinium cranberry. So in addition to having the genome sequences of individual species, we can now compare genome sequences of related species. And this has been done in the rosaceae, for example, where apple and strawberry and peach were compared. And so this gives us information about how, among other things, how blocks of genes are conserved during evolution. And there are also now bioinformatic programs that can integrate genomic data with transcriptomic data, proteomic data, and metabolomic data. And all this helps to better annotate genes or to better predict their function. So one benefit of genomics is that gene sequences can be identified more easily and with more accuracy. So once you know the sequence of a gene, you can start looking for changes or variation in that gene that lead to that alter its function. And these can be induced mutations or they can be natural mutations. And these mutations are generally found using a DNA endonuclease assay, a high-resolution DNA melting assay, or next-generation sequencing. When these techniques are applied to looking for induced mutations, this has generally been referred to as tilling, and when they're applied to natural mutation discovery, it's been called ecotilling. So on the bottom here, what I've shown is an example of high-resolution melting, and what high-resolution, what this is showing is that as DNA is heated, there is a difference in melting temperature that can be observed between a gene and an allele. In this case, it has a single SNP. And so the technologies like these are continually being improved because of their use in medical diagnostics, among other things, and obviously plant research too. So in this case, this assay is sensitive enough so that it can detect a single base pair change in fetal DNA that has been taken from a maternal blood sample. And what this dilution assay shows is that this fetal DNA can be detected in a background of maybe 25 to 30 maternal genomes. Okay, so what kind of genes are we interested in? We're interested in single genes that play major roles in flowering, in architecture, or disease resistance. And we're interested in genes that have a conserved function across plant species. And we're interested in genes that confer desirable traits when they are defective due to mutation. That is, we're looking for recessive alleles. So there are several examples of these that I'll give. TFL1 is a repressor that represses the transition to flowering, and mutations in TFL1 are responsible for repetitive flowering in perennial plants such as rose and strawberry. Mutations in TFL1 are also responsible for cultivars of tomato, soybean, and pea. So it's been a very useful gene. Double flowers have been found in cultivars of morning glory and cherry that are due to mutations in agamous. And of course, agamous is a regulator of organ development during flowering. And mutations in agamous lead to changes, the replacement of stamens with petals. The genes for the biosynthesis and signaling of gibberellin are also important in the stature of plants, in the height of plants. For example, natural and induced mutations GA20 oxidase in rice lead to semi-dwarf phenotypes in that species, and in apple, knockdown of GA20 oxidase using antisense leads to a similar phenotype. Branched 1 is a negative regulator of axillary meristems, and mutations of this gene in Arabidopsis lead to increased branching. A similar phenotype can be found in tomato using RNAi to knock down branched 1. And the final class of genes that we're interested in are looking at now are disease susceptibility genes. And these are genes that encode proteins that pathogens require to infect a plant. For example, powdery mildew requires MLO to infect barley. And natural and induced mutations of MLO in barley lead to resistance. Mutations in MLO also lead to resistance in tomato to this disease. Proteoviruses are a large group of viruses that infect plants such as pea and pepper, and proteoviruses require the translation initiation factor 4E to infect plants. And mutations in AIF4E have been responsible for resistance in pea and pepper and again a number of other plants. And it's these two genes that we started to work with. So the reason we started looking at this in petunia is that there have been several reports of petunia being infected during vegetative propagation of ornamental cultivars, of commercial cultivars, they're exposed to powdery mildew, and they're exposed to proteoviruses such as proteovirus, potato virus Y, and petunia floral model virus. So we were interested to see if we could get genetic resistance to these pathogens through mutation of this gene. So at the time we started, the petunia genome was not available. So we used EST libraries that had been developed in David Clark's lab. We screened these EST libraries with tomato MLO1, and we identified ESTs that had high homology to MLO1 that we used to develop PCR primers that we then used to clone the genomic sequence of this gene. So in petunia, this MLO1 gene has 15 exons, and it's about twice the size of MLOs from Arabidopsis and barley, mostly due to these two large introns here. So MLO belongs to a medium-sized gene family. There are 17 members of this family in tomato, but only one member is involved in powdery mildew resistance. So we compared the petunia MLO gene with MLO family genes from a number of other plants. And what we found is that the petunia gene clustered here, this is with the the MLO genes that were involved in powdery mildew resistance with the tomato MLO1, and this is a pepper MLO2 that was also involved in, I guess it would be MLO susceptibility. So we then mutagenized about 2,000 seeds of petunia using a chemical EMS, and from that we got about 1,000 M1 plants. These M1 plants were grown up, and then they were self-fertilized, and from that we got 865 M2 families. So this is Peng Zheng. He's a former graduate student who did most of this work. And to conduct HRM analysis of these mutagenized plants, Peng combined pooled together the DNA of four progeny for each family. He then did HRM analysis of each exon of MLO1. And by the time he got to exon 6, he found this. The reference DNA here is the unmutagenized petunia, Mitchell. But here is a line, the 79, that is showing a difference in melting temperature. And we then looked at these progeny individually, and it turns out that this difference in melting temperature is due to a single one of these progeny, 79-3, and that's in exon 6, or had a mutation in exon 6. So, and sequencing of that region of both the EMS mutant and the Mitchell control showed that there was a transition from G to A, which is typically what EMS does. So this is what MLO looks like in barley. It's a 7 transmembrane protein. It's got a calmodulin binding site around here somewhere. This is the cytoplasmic side of this protein. And this particular cytoplasmic loop, which is where exon 6 is particularly susceptible to amino acid substitution, or intolerant of amino acid substitution. The petunia MLO gene looks very similar. It also has these 7 membrane transmembrane domains and a calmodulin binding site. So this transition here leads to an amino acid change from glycine to glutamic acid. And when we looked at whether what the effect of this would be on protein function, it turned out that this would have a deleterious effect on protein function due to by using a bioinformatic program called Provian. Unfortunately, we lost this plant. And whether it was due to this mutation or to a background EMS mutation or something else, we don't know. We do know that through RNAi knockdown of this gene in petunia, that if we knock it down, that we do get increased resistance to powdery mildew. Let's see. So we used a similar sort of approach to look for natural variation in blueberry TFL1. To do this, we got leaves from 162 vaccinium accessions from the USDA germplasm in Corvallis. And most of these were tetraploid. There were some diploids among them. For blueberry, we did get to use the genome database, and we searched this for orthologs of TFL1. And we found 5 members of the PEBP gene family that includes TFL1 and FT and some other genes. This is one of the genes right here. There are 4 exons, 1, 2, 3, and 4. We referred to these genes by the scaffold that they were found on. So, for example, this is scaffold 1140, and this was actually the gene that had the closest DNA sequence similarity to the MLO orthologs. So we compared the gene sequence of the five PEBP family members that we found with family members from other plant species. And this is the gene that was found on scaffold 1140, and it clustered with TFL1 orthologs from apple, strawberry, and Arabidopsis. And this is the TFL1 in strawberry is the one that is when it has a natural mutation in it that causes repetitive flowering in wild strawberry. When this TFL1 is knocked down in apple, you get early flowering, it avoids juvenility, and you get repetitive flowering. So we think that we have the right gene in blueberry. There were other PEBP family members that we found identified. This is a central radialis. We found two FT genes that looked like FT and one that looked like a brother of FT. Okay, so then we looked through the Petunia exons to see if we can find or what variation we could find. And we could detect, so this is an example of what we could find. There were SNPs that we could find shown here in three cultivars that we found in exon 1. This is W8520 is the reference gene. It was the blueberry, it's a diploid blueberry that was sequenced. In this genotype ORS-285 in Grover showed a fairly simple deviation from this, and what this happened to be due to a SNP at this position that caused a substitution, amino acid substitution from arginine to lysine. In the diploid W8520, this genotype is heterozygous for at this locus. The ORS-285 is a tetraploid, and in this genotype there are three alleles that have A's and one that has G. And in Grover, which is also a tetraploid, all of the alleles have A at that locus. This, I see it here, this yellow line here of ORS-60 indicates has a slightly more complicated pattern, which indicates maybe some additional mutations in that region. And that turned out to be true. This is the SNP that the locus that all the lines had were polymorphic at. But in addition, this ORS-60 line also showed variation at three other positions, and one of these led to an amino acid substitution. So, in conclusion then, genomic resources were used to determine the gene sequence of Petunia MLO1 and blueberry TFL1. It was much easier to work with the sequence genome, but certainly you can use the ESD database to obtain a gene sequence. A petunia line with an EMS-induced mutation in petunia MLO1 was identified that was predicted to be deleterious to MLO function. And SNPs were detected in the blueberry TFL1 gene and a screen of accessions of the blueberry germplasm collection. And this research is ongoing. We're still doing some of the HRM analysis. We're also going back and just sequencing all these TFL1 genes to compare with the HRM pattern. Both HRM and sequencing have been used successfully to identify genes in other autotetraploids, such as potato and alfalfa. And in fact, in potato, autotetraploid potato, Illumina sequencing has been used to screen over 800 genes of interest. And from that, there have been genes identified that are associated with plant growth and with tuber quality. So that's the sort of approach that I think would be very useful for breeding in blueberry and other tetraploids. So I'd like to acknowledge a former graduate student, Peng Zhang, and a former postdoc, Yua Chen, who did the work with the MLO. Rupesh Gare is doing the work with the TFL1 in blueberry. Peng and Rupesh were supported by the Horticulture Department and the Institute of Plant Breeding Genetics and Genomics at UGA. David Clark gave us the EST library and also the seeds for petunia, and Nala Basel provided the blueberry material, and Alan Brown gave us access to the blueberry database. For that, I'd like to stop and take any questions.